From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. 15 days into a government shutdown, and the Salt Lake Tribune's Thomas Burr says the role of Utah Senator Mike Lee in all of this has made him either a hero or a villain. It all depends on who you ask. It does seem clear Lee has been at the center of the conservative strategy, along with Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Lee has been called Cruz's wingman, his accessory. They've been described as a libertarian Batman and Robin, with Lee playing the role of Alfred to Cruz's Bruce Wayne. Today in the program, we're talking about Senator Mike Lee, the role he's playing in the conflict in Washington. We'll discuss where he fits in his party, how he's thought of among his colleagues there in Washington, and we'll talk about his relationship with the local press and discuss what Utahns think about Mike Lee. So there's your opening. Join us after the news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we invite you to put $10 in our tip jar. Text KUER to 85944 to make that donation. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. You know, there's a lot going on in Washington right now. Well, there's a lot that's not going on in Washington right now, too. We're now 15 days into a government shutdown. We're one day away from a deadline for the U.S. to default on its debts. But it's understandable that Utah Senator Mike Lee is too busy to join us for the program today. We've been asking for the senator to join us for some time now. In fact, we asked him to be with us today, but his office says he can't fit it into his schedule. So we are going to move ahead without him and just say there is an open invitation for him to join us when he can find the time. So we're talking about Senator Lee today, about the role that he's been playing in the negotiations over shutting down the government, over funding the government, his efforts to defund and repeal Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. We're also going to be discussing where Mike Lee fits within his party, what his relationship is like with his colleagues in Washington. And we're talking about his relationships here, back home, with those of us in the press, and maybe most importantly, his relationship with voters. We're going to ask what Utahns think about Mike Lee, particularly his political alliances and his strategies. Joining us today in the program is Thomas Burr. He is senior Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune, joining us today from NPR there in Washington. And Thomas, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Terry Gilday is with us. He's KUER's news director, and we should say he covered Congress for 2 years with the Capital News Connection. And Terry, welcome back.
Thanks, Doug.
Lisa Riley Broch is with us. She's a political reporter for the Deseret News. Lisa, welcome to you.
Thank you, Doug.
And Quinn Monson is back with us. He's an associate professor in the Department of Political Science at Brigham Young University. He serves as the director for the university's Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy. He contributes to the blog Utah Data Points. And last week, he published the results from a poll that surveyed Utah voters on their views about the congressional delegation and the government shutdown. And Quinn Monson is joining us today from the studios of KBYU there in Provo. And Quinn, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to begin, first of all, before we get to the particulars of polling figures, those kind of things, I want to remind people how Mike Lee got here in the first place. And Thomas Burr, let me start with you. I guess
sure.
We should remind people this is 2010.
Yep.
He orchestrates a kind of a coup over a fellow Republican, Bob Bennett, conservative lawmaker, though decidedly more moderate. Talk about how Mike Lee sort of came to our attention in the first place.
Sure. You know, in many ways, he was one of the first that got into Congress riding this Tea Party wave. He started early on by, you know, having lectures around the state about the Constitution. And as this, you know, kind of fever got whipped up around the nation, Utah was one of the hotbeds of it. And Senator Bob Bennett at the time was very much a symbol of, you know, oh, those Republicans aren't treating us very well. They're not doing what we really want them to do. And Mike Lee, you know, capitalized on that. And he did very well. He knocked the senator out with Tim Bridgewater in the convention, went on to win the primary, and of course has now been our senator for almost 3 years now. You know, and he really has. I remember asking Senator John McCain about him previously. You know, McCain is not the biggest fan necessarily of the Tea Party movement, but I asked, what do you think of Mike Lee? And he said, he's doing what he got elected to do, which is very true.
It's interesting, Lisa Riley Roach, Bob Bennett. a pretty conservative guy, but as I said, seen as moderate. It does make you wonder whether that was a kind of one-off for someone like Mike Lee, like this was a wave in 2010, or was this? Do you get a sense it was a larger expression of will from the electorate?
Well, that's going to be a really good question come 2016 when Mike Lee is up for re-election. There's already talk among many Republicans of someone running against him from within his own party, because he has been seen as too extreme for a lot of Utah Republicans.
I want to talk about the particulars of that as we go along, because there are a number of names that are now emerging that may challenge Senator Lee. Quinn Monson, let me ask you, though. Where does Mike Lee fit in the Utah sort of scheme of things? Clearly more conservative. I think a lot would say that, but a lot more conservative?
Yeah, I think quite a bit more. I think he makes the Republican delegates at a state convention quite happy, but they're also quite a bit more conservative than Republicans generally, and more conservative than the state as a whole.
I think we need to define our terms, too. Moderate and conservative mean something entirely different, it seems, these days. To call someone like a Bob Bennett a moderate rather than a political conservative, I don't think we would have done that a few years ago. Today, conservative seems to mean unwilling to compromise. And we see where that's gotten us in Washington right now. It's not a question of how much you believe in conservative values anymore. It's a question of how willing are you to stand by those values, sometimes to an extreme, and not be willing to compromise to get anything.
This really gets to a question that we'll talk about when we get to the particulars of Quinn Monson's poll, and that is whether Utahns are in any way kind of unique from other mainstream kind of voters, not on the extreme of either sides of the parties, but whether or not they want some level of compromise versus sticking to your principles, which really gets at the particular of the question of the poll. But Terry Gilday, I wanted to get your sense of where Mike Lee is these days.
Well, it's been interesting to see how Mike Lee fits into the culture and the fabric of the Senate in the last 3 years that he's been there. For me, I think that an interesting moment to sort of see how he is respected or not respected among his fellow senators was last year in May of 2012. Several senators put budget proposals on the floor. Senator Lee did as well, and only 17 Republicans voted for his budget proposal, which was a real eye-opener for me. And while the senator was on the floor talking about his budget proposal, the president of the Senate, the person in the president's chair, had to call the chamber to order three times. No one was listening to Senator Lee, and only 17 Republicans voted for his proposal. Marco Rubio didn't vote for it, a fellow Tea Party Republican. And Mitch McConnell, the minority leader of the Senate, didn't vote for it either. Orrin Hatch did. Rand Paul did. But to bring a budget proposal to the floor for consideration and have only 17 members of your party vote for it was an indicator to me that maybe he's not really fitting into the culture of the Republican caucus.
Thomas Burrow, talk about that, if you would, his relationship. I mean, there is this sense that, of course, the Senate is steeped in a kind of protocol built around this idea of seniority. Is there some sense, beyond just his tactic related to, you know, the Affordable Care Act, that he's sort of skipping his turn in line in some way, along with Ted Cruz, which that I think they're sort of aligned in that question, I guess.
The dynamic duo, if you were. Right. You know, it is interesting to see that Mike Lee, you know, he kind of was elected on the platform and the idea of going back to Washington and breaking up the good old boys club. So, you know, I don't think he, you know, has any pause for, you know, waiting his turn kind of idea that, you know, he can come and push his own ideas and that's okay. That, you know, it may, you know, ruffle some feathers here, but maybe that's what his voters wanted him to do. I think the most illuminating thing we saw to this recently, though, was the Republican Senate caucus recently, where a lot of senators started speaking out. And we're talking about senators who aren't normally this vocal or this loud. You know, John Bozeman of Arkansas, you know, screaming at Ted Cruz and in the same way at Mike Lee for getting the GOP into this situation. There were a lot of people who were very angry. I think we saw Senator Lee walking out of that meeting pretty upset. He was almost red in the face from what might have just occurred. So, you know, there is a part. Look, he and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Toomey of Pennsylvania, there are people who get along with him, obviously, and he has his set core of folks. But there are also other, you know, senators. I mentioned John McCain, who is not the biggest fan of Senator Lee and doesn't really think that, you know, what he's doing is helping their cause.
It's interesting to hear the language. I mean, Peter King, he's a bit of a lightning rod, but he's this conservative congressman from New York. You see him a lot on conservative press. He mentions this. This was his quote. "I think Ted Cruz is a fraud and Mike Lee is his accessory." Which reveals, I guess, Quinn Munson, let me put that question to you. What does that reveal about what's going on within just the conservative faction of the Republican Party right now?
Well, they're very divided, and it doesn't bode well for their success. One of the problems with Senator Lee's stance, whether you believe in it or not, just strategically, when you launch into a position in which you don't have full support from your own party, I think it's inevitable that the other side has the upper hand. And I think the Republican caucus within both the House and the Senate are deeply divided over this issue about how to proceed and how to. I think they're united in the sense that none of them like the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, but they're divided in how to combat it, and that doesn't help in terms of producing a winning strategy.
Well, let's also talk about the portion of the statement from Representative King about Mike Lee being an accessory. Well, certainly here in Utah, we're paying a lot of attention to what he's saying and doing and his role in this fight against the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. But if you follow the national press on this whole issue, Mike Lee is not always even mentioned, let alone seen as a leader in this. You see Ted Cruz, who's running
for
president. You see Marco Rubio on other Tea Party related issues. All three of those are seen as possible contenders for the 2016 GOP presidential nomination.
But people aren't thinking about Lee like that.
Mike Lee, no, not so much. He'll be in Iowa next month at a major fundraiser for a very conservative group that's very prominent in Iowa, part of a national group. But he's not seen even there. He's seen there as a novelty that will bring people in, not as let's vet him as a potential candidate. Mm.
Terry.
It just seems that with the arrival of Ted Cruz in the 113th Congress that that Mike Lee finally has someone he can work with who will take his proposals seriously and has the charisma to take them forward. And Ted Cruz rose to prominence in a similar way than Mike Lee in the sense that he overshadowed an established candidate in Texas. David Dewhurst was the lieutenant governor in Texas who was basically bequeathed the seat that Kay Bailey Hutchison held and left. Not bequeathed, but he was Rick Perry and others in the inner Texas Republicans. David Dewhurst was the guy who was going to get the Senate seat. John Cornyn, who was with the National Republican Senatorial Committee, was working hard for David Dewhurst to become senator from Texas. And then Ted Cruz cruises in and gets the seat, and
kind of like Lee then.
Kind of like Lee. Yeah. So he really stokes this Tea Party base in Texas and comes in and grabs this seat and has the charisma and sort of the lightning behind him to do the things that Mike Lee wants to do, but people aren't taking Mike Lee seriously like they are Ted Cruz.
So the wingman is the word you hear. You heard, I mentioned this in the introduction of the program, Thomas Burr, libertarian Batman and Robin. No, not Batman and Robin. He doesn't even get to be Robin. Mike Lee is seen as Alfred for Bruce Wayne, right?
It is really fascinating to see. And you know, some of it you have to kind of chalk up to it is personality-based. And Senator Cruz has maybe, more aspirations for the White House or, you know, being more of a national celebrity. Mike Lee is, you know, the sit-back, strategize guy. He's the guy who comes up with some great ideas. He has the, you know, constitutional knowledge to say we should do this, and historically this is why we should do this. But Lee isn't trying to, you know, run for the White House at any point. So that's part of the reason. You also have to look at how their strategies go towards the media. And I know we're going to get into this at some point, but, you know, I just came from the Senate when I walked over to NPR, and, you know, Ted Cruz will walk down the hallway and talk to every reporter who's around, and Senator Lee doesn't. When they're on the floor recently, I believe it was Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, who tried to ask a really pointed question of Senator Lee. Senator Lee didn't respond. Ted Cruz, you know, swooped in and started responding to the question about Mike Lee. Hmm.
I want to come back to that, of course, Thomas, because it does get to this question. Well, I'm going to come back to it. This question of whether or not it's politically proper to respond to negative polling, because we've been told by a lot of people have been told by the Lee's office, Senator Lee's office, that you don't respond or they're not going to respond. But Ted Cruz has been responding. Others have been responding. We'll come back to that. Let me get to a few calls. 801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Barbara is with us in South Jordan. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Sure.
I just wanted to your guest to talk a little bit more about how it was that Lee got into office. Utah has a caucus system in which very few people can control who ends up going to the primaries. And, of course, as was mentioned, it was the Tea Party that supported Lee, and he kind of swooped in and without anyone knowing it, made it so that Bennett wasn't even on the ballot, the more moderate candidate. And Bennett was very popular at the time. And I remember during that primary, people were upset that they didn't even have the opportunity to vote for Bennett in the general election. And so I think there's a problem with our caucus system that someone, an extremist, likely can come in and swoop in and just take so much control so easily.
Yeah. Well, this is something that I think Quinn Monson can talk to when we talk about the particulars. But let's just say mention maybe right now, and we'll get into more detail about this later. But Terry, Lisa, since I've got you right there, my vote Utah.
Count my vote.
I should have
yes.
written that down. Yeah. Trying to think about what's that called. That goes to this question, does it not?
Yes, it does. And the Count My Vote initiative, which is spearheaded by Mike Leavitt and Rich McKeon, would basically dismantle the caucus system that Utah has and move us toward a direct primary situation. Right now, and Lisa, jump in here if I get this wrong. Right now, you go to a neighborhood caucus meeting, you elect a delegate, that delegate goes to the convention. The delegates cast the votes for those individuals who are running in the nomination. Now, they're running to get that nomination. They have to get a 60% threshold or over, and if they do, then they avoid a primary. We saw, of course, in the 2012 election cycle that Senator Orrin Hatch got 59% against Dan Lilienquist, and so he had to go to a direct primary for the first time in his Senate career. But that's the way that it works now.
That's true, that the way you describe the system. What's interesting about this Count My Vote effort, which is an initiative drive to get the question on the ballot to go before voters, is that Mike Lee, in a lot of ways, is being seen as sort of a poster child for their efforts, because here's someone who got elected through the caucus system and, as the caller said, you know, surprised a lot of people by showing up on the ballot. And a lot of us sometimes forget, but Mike Lee came in second to Tim Bridgewater at the Republican convention in 2010, and they had the runoff in the primary election. In fact, Tim Bridgewater fell just short of getting that 60% threshold. So a lot of people are now saying, look, this is what this system can produce, is someone that polls show, Deseret News, KSL, Dan Jones' poll, as well as Quinn's poll, showed clearly that people in Utah don't agree with what Senator Lee is doing. And I think that the Count My Vote people are going to exploit that as they go out and start trying to gather signatures.
And I think it's important to mention, too, that at the GOP Organizing Committee and at the Democratic Organizing Committee, there were proposals laid forward for the committee to change the caucus system as it exists now. And those were roundly rejected, especially at the Republican convention. And those proposals, as I remember them, didn't completely dismantle the caucus system.
No, it just changed the threshold.
Changed the threshold and allowed for more of for other candidates through other means, through petitions and others, to get to an open primary.
It actually was just a change in the threshold that they were asked to agree to,
okay,
which would have made it a little more difficult to win the nomination at convention. You would have had to have even more support than you do now. It was pretty straightforward, and it, as you said, roundly rejected.
They were roundly rejected. Yeah.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Barbara, thanks very much. Nancy is with us in Salt Lake. Nancy, hi.
Hi. I just want to say I am so embarrassed, disgusted by Senator Lee's action. It is so shameful and reflects so poorly on the state of Utah, and I just think it's atrocious that he would say that he's receiving emails 100-1 in favor of what he's doing. So I would encourage every Utahn out there who is as disgusted as I am to email him and tell him we do not approve of what he's doing. We do not like holding our government hostage. And what an impact, a negative impact it's had not only in our state but the entire country. And I can't wait to have an opportunity to get him out.
Can I ask you your political affiliation, Nancy? Do you mind?
I'm an independent, but I probably have voted for more Republicans than I have Democrats. But I am for the best man, but I am so sickened by this Tea Party movement and the gerrymandering that makes it so these candidates don't fear any type of general election, but they have to put all their efforts into getting out of these caucuses. And it's just so unfair to the vast majority of people in this country to be dictated by this small minority. And what they're doing is so awful. How many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people have been impacted by this and lost their businesses or are not receiving any wages or can't get health care that they need right now? And to set this horrible...
But don't get you started, right, Nancy? I'm gonna jump in there because I absolutely know where you're headed. Nancy, thanks very much. It's a good segue, actually, as we head forward to a break here to talk about, when we get back, Quinn Monson's numbers. Let's break into the particulars of some of the polling. We have Lisa Riley Roche with us, political reporter for the Deseret News. Terry Gilday here, news director for KUER's news department. Thomas Burr is with us, senior Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune, joining us from NPR in Washington. And Quinn Monson, the director for the Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy at Brigham Young University, joining us from KBYU. 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about Utah's junior Senator Mike Lee. We're kind of talking behind his back. I have to admit that because we've invited him to join us, and he says he doesn't have the time, which we understand. There's a lot going on in Washington. We've been trying to get the senator on the program for months now, and we're going to push ahead without him. We're talking about the role that he's playing in the current stalemate in Washington, talking about his relationship with the press, with voters, with his colleagues. And we invite you to join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We have reporters Lisa Riley Roche of the Deseret News with us, Terry Gilday, the news director for KUER, Thomas Burr, senior Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune, and we have Quinn Monson with us, who is the director for the Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy at Brigham Young University. And Quinn, let's talk about the polling that you've been doing, what Utahns think about all of this. The question, I guess let's get to the questions in the poll, at least these, one of the major ones, which I think gets to this point. You asked people to choose between these two statements. First, here's the first one. Senator Lee should stand by his principles even when the result is a government shutdown. And the second statement is, Senator Lee should be more willing to compromise even if it means passing a budget with funding for the Affordable Care Act. Tell us what you found.
Well, we found that overall among Utah voters, now this is, a poll of actual Utah voters that we sampled via our Utah College's exit poll. So it's a random sample of voters. And 57% said they wanted Senator Lee to be more willing to compromise. Yeah. 43% said he should stand by his principles.
Now, break that down, because what seems significant about that number is that As you've pointed out, this isn't just liberal or Democratic people saying they want him to compromise. This indicates that Republicans are also looking for him to compromise. That seems important.
Well, it's an interesting breakdown because you have almost unanimity among Democrats. 99% of Democrats want him to compromise. 65% of independents want him to compromise, yeah. But only 38% of Republicans, I say only, that's larger than you might think, given that these are the folks that you would expect would strongly support Senator Lee. But you have, this is where you get a significant proportion of his own party sort of breaking away and saying, that they don't agree with his strategy.
But that 65% of independents who want him to compromise, that is that significant? I mean, a lot of Utah voters fancy themselves independents, even if they vote in a fairly conservative way, right?
Well, the way we classify independents, we put people who say they're independent but lean toward a party as partisan. So it's actually about 12 to 15% of voters that say they're independents. But that is significant because I think they are the ones that are sort of the bellwether of where public opinion is going to break. You can reliably predict on a lot of questions, at least, that Democrats go one way and Republicans go another. And it's where independents go that kind of determines where the overall percentages are.
So I think what's interesting is this: the response coming from the Tea Party. You say that when you put the question to Tea Party supporters, you describe it as a stunning conclusion.
Yeah, it's really surprising in the sense that you don't often get 90% agreement on one side and 80% on the other. So if you ask people if they are active supporters of the Tea Party, you get about 13% of our sample that say they are active Tea Party supporters. If you ask favorability toward the Tea Party, that percentage goes up substantially. But people willing to say they're active supporters, and then people that don't know whether they're active supporters actually look a lot like supporters. So if you can sort of combine those two groups together, it's about a quarter of the population. They're 80 to 90% with Senator Lee, telling him to stand by his principles.
Right.
And the people that are not active Tea Party supporters, about three quarters say that he should be willing to compromise. I think it's important to remember how we got here. If you look back at, I mean, we talked earlier in the show about how Senator Lee was elected. It was nominated in the 2010 convention that defeated incumbent Senator Bob Bennett. We conducted a survey of the delegates in the 2010 convention, and it turns out that back in 2010, where you have only 13% of the population and still under 20% of Republicans saying that they actively support the Tea Party, in the 2010 convention it was 43%.
Wow.
And if you put the don't know together with that, it's over a majority of the convention. And it was about 87% that said they had a favorable view of the Tea Party at the 2010 convention. So the group that really pushed Senator Lee's career forward still stands by him. They love what he's doing, mm-hmm. and I think he's responding to that subset of voters. The problem for him becomes that he's put himself in a position where, while he has the strong support of his strong conservative and Tea Party base, he's beginning to alienate some of the more moderate or moderate conservative voters, even within his own party.
Doug, can I jump in here?
Of course.
The interesting part, of course, is we have to look 3 years down the road. I mean, Senator Lee's doing this today. Our voters are going to remember this, when he's up for re-election in 3 years. But I think Quinn's poll very much shows, that Lee has a good base in Utah still. There are people who will still stand by him. He's probably earning a lot more kudos from them right now for sticking to his guns. We've seen the last couple weeks, he's becoming, best pals with Sarah Palin. They were on the mall this weekend, doing speeches. They're going to speak in Iowa soon. So he definitely has, a very good core base of people. It may be lessening, but they're there.
Let's go back to the phones. 801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Larry is with us in Salt Lake. Larry, welcome.
Thank you.
Sure.
The thing that motivated my call was Lisa's comment that the people in Utah are embarrassed or whatever she said about what Mike Lee is doing.
And She didn't say that. There was another caller who did.
Oh,
but
okay.
I don't want to ascribe that to Lisa Riley Roche. Nancy said it. But you're right. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Anyway... I totally support what he's doing. The problem is, how else are you going to get people's attention? Here's the principle. Anytime you send money to Washington, have it filtered through the bureaucracy, and then have to beg to get some of it back, it's unconstitutional. And it means that we're surrendering our power to the federal government. And that is not what the Constitution is about. And so, I don't know, I think we're kind of at the end of our wits. How do we get the attention of the people? And it's really through compromise that's got us there. And the socialists have pushed it that way for years, and we compromise, and we get a little closer. And pretty soon, the people that believe in the Constitution are the radicals. And so I totally support it, unless you can show me a better way to get people's attention and raise the issues. The other thing is the state legislators and governors need to step up to the line and take back their responsibilities, which they've abdicated to the federal government over the years. So
yeah,
I think it's a great way to get attention to the real problems. But, you know, people start maligning it and, you know, discrediting it. And it's the real issue is we're surrendering our power to the federal government.
Thanks very much, by the way, Larry. Glad you called. 801-585-WEST is the number. So, Quinn Monson, where is it's interesting. The question is whether Utah voters, you know, are with Larry, or if he represents a faction that is, it sounds like he represents a faction that might be a bit more conservative. There's something that I think, Lisa, you interviewed Kirk Jowers of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. He said this. He said Utahns are conservative, but they're also pragmatic. And here's the quote that you included in your article. He said, Utahns expect effectiveness and efficiency and results out of their government, but not ideological tantrums. So, Quinn Monson, where are Utahns? This idea of making a case, standing on principle, as Larry mentions, versus the idea of getting something done, compromising for efficiency. Where are most Utahns, do you figure?
Well, I agree with the caller. I agree with Larry that certainly Senator Lee has succeeded in getting attention. There's no question that his tactics have gotten attention. The problem is that because he doesn't have the unity of his own party, either through elected officials or his constituents, that's perceived as a weakness by his opponents, who now are responding to his tactics by refusing to acknowledge them. So it's a problem. I see the frustration come through, and believe me, I get comments and emails on some of these polling numbers from people very much like the caller. And I guess my only response is it's not working. He's not getting, I don't think, what he wants. What's happening is he's losing support among the electorate. And frankly, to get anything done at all, you have to stay in office. And if he loses support from voters that want him to be more conciliatory, he's in danger of having the same kind of thing that happened to Senator Bennett. I think Senator Bennett lost touch with his base and got defeated at the convention. I think Senator Lee is in danger of losing touch with the general electorate. And if faced with the right challenger, he could be in real trouble in a few years.
Hey, Quinn, on that, I talked to Senator Lee's office before I jumped on this program, and they would like to point out that Senator Hatch is actually 4 points higher on the negatives from your poll. And they're saying, why isn't that the storyline that actually Hatch is not doing as well as Lee is?
But Hatch is running for re-election, though.
That's exactly my point. He's not running for re-election again. I don't think, frankly, many people care. And I think he hasn't actually put himself at the center of the debate nationally. There's another difference, too, and that is that Senator Lee's numbers are very polarized. So if you look at the distribution, we have it, you know, somewhat or strongly unfavorable, somewhat unfavorable, somewhat favorable, and strongly favorable. If you look at Senator Hatch's, it looks kind of like a bell-shaped curve with most of the people on somewhat favorable or somewhat unfavorable. If you look at Senator Lee's, it's a U-shaped curve. You got a 45% on strongly unfavorable and another quarter on strongly favorable. I would point out that Senator Lee has strongly unfavorable numbers that are equal to John Swallow, right? That's our beleaguered attorney general who's had a bunch of investigations. That's not a good place to be.
We had our own poll, Deseret News KSL poll by Dan Jones, out the weekend before Quinn's poll. And what was really interesting is how similar Quinn's results were to what we found. Our question was basically asking voters across the state whether they thought it was worth continuing this fight if it meant shutting down the government? And the answer clearly was no. I think we had 56% to Quinn's 57% on the compromise
question.
That
seems remarkable.
It is. Dan Jones told me that he was really impressed by the similarities between these findings. Another question that we asked that goes to what we're talking about in terms of the politics of this is who did Utah voters blame for what was happening in Washington right now? And what was really interesting is, yes, 21% blamed President Obama, 20% blamed the Republicans in Congress, including our Republicans back there. Only 6% blamed the Democrats. And most people, 41%, said it's everybody. So if
pox
people
in all your houses.
Exactly. Yeah. If people really were going along with this idea that it was so important to continue this fight no matter what, I think there would have been much more blame for the Democrats, Harry Reid and the Democrats in Congress and the president, and much less for the Republicans. And yet that wasn't the case. People are frustrated.
We asked a similar question, except on the Dan Jones poll, they allowed people to say both Democrats and Republicans. We made them choose. And when you force them to choose, you actually get it's about 50-50, a little more blaming the Democrats in a Republican state like Utah. Maybe it's 55-45. But there's substantial blame for Republicans, even among Republicans.
Let me read
it. I don't have a poll to cite, but I can say I'd love for Quinn to go back soon whenever this is finished up and ask the question of the same question again, because, you know, as we're seeing right now, Obamacare is here to stay. There's even the House Republicans are right now not talking about getting rid of it anymore. That we all know that when the government starts running again, the Affordable Care Act will be there, may have a few small parts missing. But, you know, so in the end, you know, was this worth it? Even, you know, they didn't get what they wanted.
Well, I think that's the interesting thing, is that Lee and Cruz couldn't find any support in the Senate among Senate Republicans to pull this stunt. John McCain told Fox News a few days ago that defunding Obamacare was never a goal that Senate Republicans could achieve, so they didn't push for it. And when Mike Lee floated the idea of a government shutdown over a defunding of the Affordable Care Act, Richard Burr from North Carolina called it one of the stupidest ideas he'd ever heard. So to get that support, they had to go to the House, which is unusual for senators. It's not horribly unusual. It happens sometimes, but it's interesting to see Ted Cruz and Mike Lee over on the House side at a House press conference with John Boehner and House leadership.
And yet, of course, now we're hearing Ted Cruz being called the Speaker of the House for him negotiating all of this work over in the House, which is interesting. And I guess the question is, so Terry, do you have a sense that there was talk about this strategy before, and Republicans told Ted Cruz, they told Mike Lee, look, this isn't going to work, don't even go after it, and they did anyway. They kind of went rogue.
I think they did, because Richard Burr and McCain and Lindsey Graham and other prominent Senate Republicans, they could see what the outcome would be, that it would hurt Republicans' prospects in the next election, that it would that a lot of the blame would be shined on Republicans, and so they're concerned about a potential takeover of the Senate in 2014, and that's what they're looking toward. They're looking toward that goal. Now, we see the Tea Party caucus in the House and how it has a difficult influence on John Boehner and his ability as Speaker of the House to hold court and maintain his leadership position and be able to whip his caucus into being able to vote for something. But in the Senate, McCain, John Cornyn, and others that are interested in trying to take over the Senate for Republicans, they know that they knew from the start this was a bad idea.
I'm hearing that even from Republicans here in Utah, prominent Republicans, very active in the party, saying, look, this is a huge mistake. It's going to cost us votes nationally and maybe even locally. Let's remember the attorney general. That seat will be up. Democrats have a real chance for the first time in years of taking that. One Republican here, our national committee woman, Enid Mickelson, told me right at the beginning of the shutdown, what would we be talking about on October 1st if it wasn't for this shutdown, if it wasn't for this battle that we can't win? It would have been all of the problems people encountered when they tried to get online to find out about the Affordable Care Act. People would have been pointing out the flaws, the concerns, the issues they felt needed to be dealt with. But instead, we were talking about what the Republicans were doing with the shutdown. That's extremely frustrating to a lot of members of the GOP here.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Lisa Riley Roche with us, political reporter for the Deseret News. We have Terry Gilday, director for KUER News. Thomas Burr is with us there in Washington. He's the senior Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune. And Quinn Monson is joining us, director for the Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy at Brigham Young University. We'll take more of your calls, read some of your emails when we get back from a break. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation about Utah's junior Senator Mike Lee, the role that he's playing in this political battle going on in Washington. 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Back to the phones. Thad is with us in Salt Lake. Thad, welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to just make three quick points. One is, I'm curious to know what your speakers think about the fact that Mike Lee may just be worrying about somebody who's more Mike Lee than Mike Lee running against him when he runs for re-election, so he's feeling that he has to stake out this very far position to do that. The other two points I wanted to make, though, very quickly was, one is, I'm actually giving a talk in Quinn Monson's class today about the fact that doing things the way Mike Lee's trying to do them is not very effective because it's kind of an all-or-nothing strategy, and there's no way to move things along that continuum to what he wants. He's just trying to get all of it at once, which is not going to work in the system of government we have. And the second point I want to make about the types of people Mike Lee has to deal with is, if you read, there's a recent report that was done by Democracy Corps, which your readers can just find it by Googling Democracy Corps, and they did a focus groups of Republicans, including Tea Party Republicans. And in many respects, these people think that the Democratic Party has already won everything and that they're just trying to fight to get back some of the things that are going on now and that we already live in a socialist world. And I'm curious to know what they think of that whole argument and how that affects what Mike Lee is doing.
Quinn Monson, you want to respond?
Well, I'll go backwards through those questions. I think our caller, Larry, was a kind of a nice illustration of what Thad is talking about in terms of the kinds of voters that believe in Senator Lee and the kind that he are appealing to that really, I think that's right. I think some of them at least do agree that the kinds of things that the government has been doing have been favoring the Democratic Party, have been moving toward the left and so on for years and years. And so they've sort of run out of alternatives in terms of what to do. And I agree that it's difficult to have an all or nothing strategy because you don't give the other side room to negotiate. If you're unwilling to negotiate, then that's the business of government. I just don't understand how an all or nothing strategy can be effective when you don't have the votes. I think, frankly, Harry Reid is in a better position for an all or nothing strategy at the moment, and that's kind of what he's playing. He's sort of refusing to capitulate, and he's, now that he's sort of won the battle of public opinion for the time being, he's put the Republicans in the Senate in a very difficult position where they are going to have to capitulate quite a bit, and he has the upper hand.
Well, to the question and we should mention this wasn't just some random person who's going to be speaking in Quinn's class later today at Thad Hall of the Political Science Department at the University of Utah. I wanted to clarify that. But one of our someone wrote, San Pete writes in, the approval that Lee needs to concern himself with most, as far as his political prospects go, is among Utah Republican caucus goers. I expect, he says, he still fares well with them, which gets to Thad's first question. And is he just sort of shoring up that base? The only thing he has to worry about right now is that sort of ultra-conservative wing that comes out in the early stages of these political fights.
I think that's correct to a point, but that only gets you through June. And I think, you know, we do have a Democratic Party in the state. They don't, they're not very visible often.
But wait,
they don't show up to every election, but they do have a few good candidates.
But you're not. You're not saying that in a statewide election in 2016, that there will be that Utahns, if they have a choice between Mike Lee, whom they may say is not hasn't compromised enough, and a Democrat, you would say that there's the possibility that a Democrat could actually win in that case?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Huh. That I think that actually he has a lot of time until 2016, so he may be able to repair this. And a lot of this depends on how things play out this week. I mean, if we went into a default and the economy tanked, I think he'd be in real trouble at that point. But I think, for example, if the election were held this November and he were running against Jim Matheson, Matheson has proven to be a master at pulling away Republican votes because he portrays himself as a moderate to conservative Democrat. And he has, for a decade now, successfully convinced independent-leaning Republicans and not-so-strong Republicans, the more moderate Republicans, to vote for him in large proportions, 40 and 50% in some elections.
Well, a couple of others.
Those are the very voters that Lee is losing in terms of his favorability. So the strong Republicans are by and large sticking by him. The strong conservatives are sticking by him. But the moderate conservative Republicans are wishing that he would soften a little bit and compromise, and they might be open to somebody else.
Wow.
Sure.
A couple of other things to keep in mind. The Count My Vote initiative, if that goes forward, it won't be a question of playing to ultra-conservative delegates anymore. It'll be a question of playing to voters as a whole, Republican voters as a whole, to get through the primary. And even if that doesn't happen, let's remember the 2010 delegates were very different than the delegates we saw last go round after the LDS Church urged voters to get out and participate
in the dynamic system.
Yes, exactly. And I think Quinn can speak to this, but I think that diluted some of what a lot of people would see as extremism in among the GOP delegates. And let's remember, too, that Senator Hatch, while he did get forced into a primary, it was a close vote, as Terry pointed out, he did have the ability to get out there and get the delegates elected that he knew would support him and almost avoided a primary despite some of the same concerns that got Lee elected.
So, Thomas Burr, what I'm hearing is that we've been sort of static in Utah politics for so long that do you get a sense that the ground is in some way shifting?
Yeah, certainly. I think, the toppling of Chris Cannon in 2008 when we got Jason Chaffetz, showed that people are tired of waiting around for their turn. So you have plenty of people who are, could be lining up to challenge Senator Lee, Thomas Wright, Lane Beatty. Josh Romney could be talked into it at some point, maybe. Hmm. There are people who are already looking at this seat and saying, I could get the business community to back me because right now the business community may not be, super happy with Senator Lee. There's also, other people who could be waiting in the wings and saying, I'm tired of, waiting for somebody to retire just to run for election.
I didn't want to let the hour end before we talked a little bit about his relationship with the press, or maybe better said, the local press. And got about 3 minutes left, which is good because I didn't want to spend, a lot of time whinging about this. But Terry Gilday, let's start with you. What's it been like trying to get Mike Lee to talk to you?
Well, it's sort of been a situation of diminishing returns over time. Brian Phillips is the communications director for Lee. Emily Bennion is his press secretary. Those are the people that I work with to try to set up an interview with the senator. Now, KUER doesn't have a stringer or a reliable stringer in Washington, D.C., so most of the time we're doing phone interviews, but it's great if we can get him. In radio, we have to worry about the quality of the sound, so it's great if we can get him into a studio to do an ISDN interview. That hasn't happened since I've been here as news director for 2 years. And I know that KUER used to do that with Senator Bennett and Senator Hatch. But basically, it's been difficult or almost impossible over the last year to get Senator Lee on the phone on an issue that has nothing to do with a press release that they have sent out or sound bites or tape that they're offering. And Lisa had a great article in the Deseret News about the fact that Senator Lee wouldn't talk about these poll numbers. I called Brian Phillips and asked him to provide us with some time for the senator to talk about the poll numbers. He said no. And then I read Lisa's article. I'm like, this is kind of a transcript of the conversation I had with Brian Phillips. So they've been
now,
very
the idea
very
was that they what the idea was that you're that, that that no one could be expected, no political figure could be expected to talk about bad polling figures. But we should point out Ted Cruz has been incessantly talking about the bad poll figures related to his position, which seems contradictory, at least interesting.
We had
when I
tried.
When I read, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Tommy.
No, I was going to say, Lisa, when I saw your story last week, I was going to send you a note and say, welcome to the club. I understand exactly what you're dealing with because, you know, I do work here in Washington and, you know, the senator hasn't called me for a long time. I actually literally have to, like, you know, wait for him off the Senate floor and try to get him on his way to the elevator. And he's stopped talking to me for quite a while now. His communications people essentially say we're the same as Mother Jones and Huffington Post.
Wow.
But they are, you know, they are doing things like Greta Van Susteren, Neil Cavuto. They're doing Fox News. But what they're looking at is, you know, what's beneficial to us. And I guess the Salt Lake Tribune is not beneficial.
Well, let me just point out, he's been on Rush Limbaugh 3 times over the last year. He's been on Sean Hannity at least 6 times, on Mark Levin 8 times. He's been on Doug Wright's program on KSL 10 times, various amounts of time during those times. So he is talking to some people.
That's the problem we ran into when KSL TV sent one of our reporters, Andrew Wittenberg, back to Washington to interview members of the delegation and others about what was going on. We obviously wanted very much to talk to Senator Lee. Didn't have time for us, had time for some national media. That was the reason that we tried to get him last Thursday for both print, radio, and TV to answer questions about the shutdown. And you can't ask questions about the shutdown in Utah without asking about what these poll numbers show and how continuing the same fight in light of these numbers, how that serves his constituents.
Well, I sound a little bit like Chris Wallace when I say, Senator Lee, or we invite you to join us. That's what I'll say, I guess, finally. Let me thank Lisa Riley Roach, political reporter for the Deseret News. Lisa, thanks.
Thank you.
Terry Gilday, thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Doug.
Director of the News Department here at KUER. Tommy Burr, senior Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune. Tommy, thanks.
Thank you, Doug.
And Quinn Monson, director of the Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy at Brigham Young University. Quinn, thanks to you.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Let me mention today we're posting a new video to our companion site, Video West. It's an online showcase of stories created by Utah filmmakers. And this week we're premiering a new short film by the Goodline filmmakers. It's a lyrical portrait of a savant sculpturer, Alonzo Clemens. Visit us at videowest.kuer.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We'll be right back.